Hi, I'm Larry Lieberman here for Inside Windows Phone. Today we're talking to Arturo Toledo from our user experience team. Arturo, do you think user experience is important when it comes to an application on a phone?
Yeah, it's definitely fundamental.
Yes. I mean,
we keep seeing every day, you know, in the marketplace get filled up with different applications, and we can clearly see that the users will tend to favor it or to rate higher an application that's giving them a better user experience versus one that's simply delivering a functional solution.
Right, so something more of a full experience, if you will.
Exactly. And to that point, and that's actually a good point. User experience is traditionally understood as the design or how mm-hmm. things look and feel. But it really is about the things they work, the way they look, how usable they are. So it's the whole experience of using an application.
Wow. So do you think, you know, Windows Phone obviously mm-hmm. started out with the proposition of creating this great, you know, experience itself with its own operating system. And then for third-party apps, we allow developers to extend that in different ways or use the same paradigms and yeah. concepts. I know sometimes, though, people overdo it because we have our design system, Metro, you know, people sometimes equate Metro with the pivot or the panorama, and it's not just that. It's really a much more set of principles that go into it.
Yeah. I must say I recently joined the Windows Phone Design Studio. It's
right.
been an amazing couple months already, learning a lot from many super talented designers that are there. You can see the passion that they've put into defining Metro and coming up with these specific you know, philosophy and practical ways of creating Metro, and like you say, crafting the consumer experience.
Mm-hmm.
From that, we've inherited a lot of that goodness that we're exposing to developers in different ways. Pivot and Panorama, clearly the two main ways.
Right.
Although one of the big things that I've learned in these 2 months, thanks to a lot of designers there and conversations that we have just there in the studio, is that Metro really goes beyond just Pivot and Panorama. Right, it's more about
right.
it's about typography and layout and
content, not Chrome.
Content on Chrome. Content
right.
is king, and we're going to take a look at some screenshots that illustrate that a little bit more.
Okay.
But yeah.
So you're here mm-hmm. today to mm-hmm. walk us through some of the learnings you had when you built your first Windows Phone application. Is that?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
They, you know, from day one, we had the need. I had the need to jump into crafting some applications. And basically, I had to catch up with all these amazing people who are in the studio. So I've been trying
right.
to do my best to learn. And this month, I've gathered a collection of tips. And that's the goal for today. I would like to share
sure.
some of these tips with
Should
our friends.
Should we jump into your presentation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And feel free to interrupt me anytime if you have any questions. So this is what we want to talk about, right? It's Metro design tips, some of the biggest and most practical things that I've learned in this month.
You bet.
And hopefully
you
this
got
will
your Twitter tag there, I see.
Absolutely. Twitter okay. always doing self-promotion.
So
first of all, I want to talk about Metro, right? So we've all heard stories about Metro. We've all probably seen presentations about what is Metro.
And this is not Metro here.
And this is not Metro.
This is definitely not Metro.
Exactly. And that's why I love this slide that I've
okay.
seen used in many presentations, because this shows us how Windows Mobile used to look in the past.
Well, actually, this was the plan for Windows Mobile 7. That never happened.
Thank God.
Yeah. So, you know, Windows Mobile had been going on for a long time, and they were going in this direction.
Exactly.
When we hit the reset button.
Yeah, and to your point, the point you mentioned a moment ago, this was all about Chrome. You can notice that there are a lot of gradients.
A grid of icons.
A grid of icons. You can see there's a lot of like reflections and gradients and effects going on.
It kind of makes me think of Windows 3.1.
Yeah, and we must admit that was a huge trend, you know, in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
even kind of the first half of the, you know, from 2000 to 2010.
Right.
But really now, it's all about exposing the content, right? Let's
yes.
clean up all the things, the ornamentation, you know, all the ornaments that are not really needed, and let's just expose the content and make the content the king. Now, we've also seen, and I'm sure a lot of our friends here that are watching the video have seen these type of screens before, but I want to highlight some specific points of what we mean by cleaning up the UI. this is talking about typography, right?
Right?
One very simple example in terms of typography is we prefer to the use of fonts.
Like that, so people can see.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, the use of sans serif fonts. Now, here's a very clear example. On the right side, you can see the serifs are these ornaments that we, in Windows Phone, we avoid,
we go away
right?
from that, right?
Yeah, our for official font there is a Go.
I've heard some people describe it as a Swiss style.
Yeah, it's part of the Swiss family.
Okay.
Certainly, the root and the mother of all fonts here is Helvetica.
Right.
If you guys are interested in learning more about Helvetica, take a look at the documentary that it's available.
You can maybe link to it on the page.
Yeah. It's a great documentary, and it's got an amazing way for you to understand what the school that follows and appreciates Helvetica is looking for. They're talking about cleanness. They're talking about removing things that are not necessary, and that automatically makes the content come front and center.
Okay.
Another example here, also in controls, right? So on the left, we have kind of what we would call an old school type of slider.
Yep.
Right? We can see we have these little like bars with rounded corners, with gradients, with a highlight, with drop shadows. You know, might look beautiful, but it's just too much, right? On the right side, we have an example of a clean Metro slider. It has what it needs. It has a thumb. It has basically the trail
it's
that
very
the,
minimal.
The thumb. It's minimal. That's
right.
It's the only thing that you need.
Okay.
And we advocate a lot for that. Another example here is iconography. And some of you might have seen Karina Black's video on how to create these type of icons.
But the ones on the right are the ones that we're going
that's
for.
That's what we're going for.
Yeah.
Something
much more clean than the picture.
Exactly. And we're noticing that some developers tend to immediately gravitate to doing something kind of what we have on the left, which is if this is an envelope or this is a mail application, I'll just put up the photo of an envelope.
Right.
Well, that might be a good idea when it comes to the Windows Phone experience and you leveraging the Windows Phone experience to make your application even more enjoyable. It's better if you go to the minimalist approach that we have on the right side, which is much more Metro-friendly.
You know, I think one of our competitive smartphone platforms, one of our competitors, a lot of their apps actually look like real-world equivalents, like the calendar looks like a real calendar, as opposed to being much more tailored to the experience. And I think that's what we mean when we say authentically digital.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, in a way, it's like if we have, you know, a wooden shelf in the physical world,
right,
and we translate that to a digital world,
right,
you know, it's a different medium, right?
It's not necessary, really.
Exactly. We have the digital medium is made out of pixels.
Mm-hmm.
It's made out of touch. It's not real 3D. It can pretend to look 3D, but it's not real 3D. So we're really passionate about and we really believe that the best way for consumers to enjoy their experiences, to just, you know, clean things up and really make content come to the forefront. Again, Helvetica, if you guys are more interested, just, you know, search for Helvetica.
We'll link to it.
Yeah, we'll give you different links. And actually,
even this slide a lot.
Yeah, everyone has seen this. And some of the things that I've been learning about this particular slide is that, you know, Helvetica is a font. But it was really part of an art movement and an understanding of how to express and how to communicate ideas. The biggest impact of the Helvetica school of thought has also been used in urban signaling, transportation type of signs and these type of things.
Global transportation signage.
Yeah, and
instantly recognizable. It's global. It's focused on getting you from point A to point B.
If you're in an airport and you know you have to go to X gate, you don't want to have ornaments or, you know, cute things that distract you. You just want to know the number and the direction.
And yet there is style and design to it. It's not completely devoid of that.
Yeah, there is a lot of, there's kind of it's a style that mixes the best of your right brain and your left brain.
Right.
You rationalize things and they're functional. But at the same time, there is an artistry in picking up the right colors and knowing how to abstract. Sometimes it's harder to remove than to add.
Oh, yeah. you know, we give people all these pieces that they can use. We give them the controls. We give them the extra controls in the Silverlight Toolkit. We give you the templates in Visual Studio. How do you put all these things together in a way that maintains that, you know, beauty and look and feel?
Yeah.
I think that's the key challenge, right?
That's a key challenge, and that's where we are definitely going to be investing more time in the upcoming weeks to produce lots of materials for you guys. But just to give you a few notes on that, and I'm going to go through these slides real quick. I'm sure many of you have seen some of this.
We could even post the slides on the site.
Yeah. So if you like, to your point, Larry, we could start giving people some ideas on how they can start, you know, solving the actual design of their application. One of the first things that I come across, you know, is that we have a tendency to go straight into coding our application because we're empowered, right? If you're a developer, the tools are amazing.
I mean, you know, I think Rob Miles last week or in the videos we recorded 2 weeks ago was saying that they are the best. It's the best IDE on the planet. If some people came from Mars, they wouldn't have something better, or something like that. Rob said it much better than I do. So
No, and I think there's a general agreement and there's clear perception from developers out there that, you know, the tools that are out there for creating Windows Phone applications are you know, amazing and make it really easy to create an application.
And for a developer, it's really natural to just open a Visual Studio and start.
Exactly. You know, file new project,
and you're saying
panorama.
You know, I've heard designers say this before, too, that you should start with paper and pencil, even.
Exactly. So what do we recommend you do? Plan, right? And when it comes to creating a user experience...
What is this slide trying to say, though? I'm not sure I get what this slide is trying to say.
Let me tell you what it means, Larry.
Okay.
So when we talk about user experience design and we talk about planning, we're really saying that you are a storyteller. When
really?
You build and you craft an application for the phone, don't think of yourself as a developer. I'm sure you like movies, you know, you might like science fiction movies or perhaps even drama movies, I don't know.
Sure, like the Austin Powers soundboard app, for example.
Exactly.
Now that's telling a story, right?
Everything tells a story, right?
Okay.
If you're building a weather application, you're building a game, think of yourself as a storyteller. Think of yourself more as a movie director.
Not everybody does this, but these are the things you think we all should be thinking about.
Exactly. That's what you
There's definitely a lot of applications out there that aren't that good. In fact, I think it's fair to say that most applications are incredibly bad.
Yeah, and when you have an idea,
Over
and you will have a lot of ideas, I mean, and this is the special moment when you have that idea and you say, you know, I'm going to invest the next few weekends or weeks in building an application for Windows Phone, you know, switch your mind at that moment and make yourself believe that you're a storyteller, you're a movie director, and craft the story of how you want your users to check the weather, to reserve a table for their favorite restaurant, to play a game. Ask yourself some of the questions that we have on the slide here. Try not to go just straight to coding. I know it will be tempting, but, you know, just write some of these answers. Think about the story.
For me, it's about drawing out each stage of the user experience in the app. So, you know, if you're going to have a set of screens people go through, just draw it down on paper and see what it looks like. I mean, a number of other people advocate using tools like Expression Blend, which has Sketchflow. Personally, I'm not, you know, Sketchflow is a pretty neat tool for sketching things out, but in my sense, it's almost as hard as actually doing the app itself when you get to it. So you don't use that stuff over again. So it's almost better to start with pen and paper in many ways.
You can use anything. You can use pen and paper. You could use PowerPoint. And as a designer, I should probably not say that. But the reality is that you can use anything you want to prototype. The goal is that after you come up with your story,
you're going to hurt your designer cred.
I know. With all due respect. After you crafted your story and you have imagined what the application will be like, it's time to do what you're saying, Larry. You know, bring this down to paper, to PowerPoint, to VCO. A lot of people that are watching this video, I'm sure they have VCO right there.
This slide here, you're talking about actually sketching that out and drawing and looking at what each page looks like.
Exactly. And again, to the movie production metaphor, right? Once a writer has a story, comes a storyboarder that works with the director, and they come up with storyboards, right? And they show the different scenes and what each scene will do. This is exactly the same. There's no difference.
Okay.
How these things will be accomplishing different functionality. And furthermore, something you also mentioned, Larry, these screens are not just isolated little experiences within your application. They're all interconnected.
Right.
So if you can lay all of this in a kind of a larger scratch board or, you know, surface area, it really helps understanding how things are starting to flow. By allowing yourself to sketch wireframe and prototype on early stages of your process, you will surface out functional challenges or issues, showstoppers or opportunities.
Right.
If you jump directly into coding, you might discover some of these issues too late when you've been coding for 8 weeks.
Right.
And you might realize, oh, this is not working. This is another example, you know, certainly a much more complex
right.
application here. Another typical question that we see all the time is when to use Panorama versus when to using Pivot, right?
Right.
Here are some very specific items for you guys to consider. Think of these almost even as
Panorama's
a checklist.
Panorama is more of a magazine. And,
yeah. Okay. Panorama is, think of it more exactly, more like a magazine. Think of, and in fact, again, I love to point people out to go to real world scenarios. Go to your favorite, magazine store.
Yeah. But the Panorama is also a bit of a heavier control, right? Because it's got that big picture in the back that it has to load and decode. And from performance perspective, you may find Panorama a little bit more tricky to deal with as a developer. And Pivot is much more straightforward. But one thing you don't have here, which I think people also need to think about, is not using either of these controls.
Absolutely.
Because there are lots of great, simple experiences. I mean, if you're keeping your app very simple, which is another...
Like a chronometer, for example.
Sure.
Or
a kitchen timer. There's a lot of different experiences where you may not necessarily need... a lot of different types of data, and a single page may be what you want.
That is a particular area that I've been getting more and more passionate about, trying to learn more about how we can take Metro beyond Pivot and Panorama.
Right.
And hopefully we're going to be rolling out more videos with you, Larry, in the future. We can talk more about that. But yeah, Panorama is basically, think of it as a magazine. It's great as an entry point. We have different ways in which the potential weight of Panorama in terms of the image and the elements, they can be addressed in different ways, like the ability to display a loader or to go to the first screen at the beginning. Pivot, you know, it's a great way of showing different views
filtered
for the same
views
content.
Of the same content, like the inbox in Windows Phone is a great example, I think, because you can see only your urgent mail or only your unread mail or all the mail. And just with a very cool flick of your finger, you get those compelling segments of your data.
Yeah.
And for me, that's one of the best things about Metro, something we offer that others don't, this paradigm that end users are familiar with because our apps use them, and now you're able to very easily use them in your applications. But of course, the trick is putting them all together in a way that's beautiful and makes sense. And you know, I wish it was easier than it is. It's hard. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do sometimes.
Yeah, well, crafting design takes time as developing or coding an app, right?
Right.
One of the typical approaches that I've seen to use Pivot and Panorama together is you know, I have a very simple workflow chart here. You start with what we could call the main app hub for your application, where you might have something like a panorama,
so this is
an
just
entry point.
The entry page to your application.
The entry page. Think of it as a magazine, like the cover of a magazine. It looks cool.
Right.
It looks interesting. It hints people and it invites people to drill deeper. And then you can navigate into pivots, perhaps, where you access particular types of content that are filtered in different ways.
Right.
Here's an example of
this is the music hub.
This panorama.
This is our panorama experience and the first party experience.
Yeah. And as you can see in this particular case, each of the panels in the panorama show very different layouts, right, for different types of things.
Like, well, the thing I like about this example here is you've got this long rectangle of that you see there in the middle that doesn't all fit on one screen, but it still is relaying in a you know, graphical manner an interesting subset of the information that you're exposing. So for someone to, and they have to pan in order to see all of it. So it's kind of like an interactive experience.
And I must say that for people that are new to Windows Phone, maybe they were using another phone in the past, or this is their first smartphone, their first choice.
Right.
The feeling of swiping a panorama right and left is one of the things that makes them go, wow, because it makes them feel like they're dealing with a large piece of information.
Yep.
And I think the
phone it's extended beyond the boundaries of the small device.
Yeah.
And one of but it's interesting because this is also something we got a lot of criticism for early on was that our UX doesn't necessarily lend itself to high information density.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly the panorama. I mean, because you've got a lot of negative space there. You've got a lot of padding, and it's very clean and simple. And I tend to think that we do actually have high information density if you think about pivots that let you, you know, show this complex sets of data and compelling subsets. But the panorama is much more about browsing and drawing people in and giving them an entertaining viewport into your application experience.
Exactly, and one of the things that we have to highlight about Pivot and Panorama is that, in my opinion, they're really structured a lot into creating applications or experiences that allow users to consume information, to consume content. There is another type of application that allows people to do things, to perhaps like productivity applications.
A more functional app.
Exactly. Now, you can
fit... And you wouldn't use a panorama for that.
In many cases, not.
Right.
There are ways in which you can implement functionality or you know, kind of productivity type of scenarios in a panorama or in Pivot.
Right.
But those are some of the things that, you know, hopefully in some of the next sessions we'll be able to talk more about that.
Sure.
And this is another example of Panorama. Facebook is a great example of how we are showing very different types of content. We have a navigation menu on the left.
Right,
we have
and this
photos,
is a third-party application example.
This would be a perfect example of a third-party application. This is another example.
Another third-party application.
Yeah. One of the interesting things about Panorama is the background.
Mm-hmm.
Right here we can see that kind of delicious, yummy-looking photograph with the cupcakes. That the ability for Panorama to handle a background image,
right.
It adds yet one more dimension. And the way that the team designed this on the phone, and thanks to the good performance we have, the elements that are floating on top of the background move at a different speed versus compared to the background.
Parallax movement.
Mm-hmm.
So you get this interesting three-dimensional interaction that you see.
Yeah.
Even though it's a 2D representation, you get this sliding look and feel.
Yeah.
It's too bad we don't have an animation.
An animation here. Yeah. The design implication for this is that as a developer, as a designer, if you're creating a Windows Phone application, you can leverage the best of that parallax effect that comes out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And that will trigger you to design backgrounds in specific ways.
Right.
And again, maybe we're just teasing you right now, but we'll be sure to cover that in
next sessions. The issue that people need to be aware with the panorama is that it can become a performance challenge in terms of making sure your application is very snappy and performant. And those are some of the most important things in a great user experience is that you don't lag, that you don't have these things. And it's something that as a developer you need to, on any platform this is true.
Yeah.
Developers spend an enormous amount of time on, when you have a great application, chances are the developers spent quite a lot of time on optimizing that performance. And so, you know, we'll talk specifically about performance in the future. But with regard to design, Panorama is a fantastic option.
Yeah. Now, let me jump directly into giving people some design considerations or common mistakes that I've seen with the use of Pivot, for example. This is an interesting one. Try to minimize the number of Pivot pages to less than 7. When you have a Pivot,
it's would be
like a tab control,
right?
If you end up having 20 tabs, like sometimes we see on desktop applications, people are going to have to swipe so much, they're totally going to forget where they're at. So Pivot is ideal when you have, you know, 7 or less than 7, actually, pages. The other thing to consider is that Pivot pages are cyclical. So when you get to page number 5 or 6, things won't stop. People will continue to have a smooth transition by continue to swipe, and they will go back to page 1. That also makes all of these very efficient.
By the way, we only have about 9 minutes, so
okay. We
should try to focus on the top items that we have.
Okay, perfect. Pivot pages, so that comes to the point as well. We should try not to, and I actually have a couple samples here. Pivot pages should try not to have any colliding or overriding swipe behavior. So this is a pivot, right? Imagine that I come up with an idea for some sort of a carousel for different videos that I can swipe. Well, the swipe behavior for navigating to them to across different pivot pages would collide in this case, most possibly would interfere with the ability for me to navigate through different thumbnails. So there are different design considerations you have to have there. The swipe for pivot will always, you know, should take precedence because you want people, you want to allow people to navigate to the next page.
Right, of course. So you don't want to have controls within the page that have touch enabled gestures at all.
Especially swiping, right? Like you can do other touch gestures, but certainly not
well, like
something
touch,
that collides.
You don't want a toggle button, you don't want a map control, you don't want anything that's going to consume that manipulation.
Anything that's kind of dragging.
Yes.
Yeah. So the other one is, well, certainly we recommend that you guys use one or two words for your pivot page headers.
Mm-hmm.
So for example here, I have a little example. You know, this is a weather application, and here we have the pivot which says, which reads weather, page one,
sure.
Page two, west coast, page three, east coast. That's just fine. But sometimes we get to see some applications that come out that have something like your weather today, or welcome to your amazing weather.
Something off the screen.
Something off the screen, which when people enjoy or take a look at this experience like this, you know, they first of all, they cannot read the whole thing, and
right.
Then we're not hinting them to the fact that there are other items, other pages to the right side of their phone. And like we mentioned before, pivot controls should ideally display items of a similar type. Now, design considerations with panorama. In this case, to your point, right, we want to keep panoramas efficient, beautiful, but efficient. So
right.
We recommend that we don't go beyond five sections in panorama.
Right.
Panorama control, consider a panorama control is portrait or orientation only. Did that change for Mango?
Portrait?
I'm not entirely sure.
We do have, well, in the first party experiences, we do support, and we do support
landscape
panorama.
Yeah.
So yes, we do support it.
We'll confirm, how's that for third party applications?
No, you can use it for third party.
Oh, then disregard this one because that's
right. It's just not necessarily recommended though.
Yeah.
You know, personally, don't think that it makes for a really mm-hmm. great look and feel. So
it flattens the content area too much.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
Yeah. So the other one is, I'm just going to skip directly to the first visit. When people have the first visit to the application, we strongly recommend that you make sure that your panorama title is aligned to the left so that people can actually understand where they're at. For subsequent visits,
yep.
Ideally you will send people to the last section that they were in as part
sure.
of the panorama.
That gets to the issue of tombstoning, which is about saving state and restoring state in
mm-hmm.
a way that people expect.
Yeah.
And so we'll definitely be talking about that more in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting close to the end of the time.
We could skip this one, but again, we have big plans for this year.
Okay. So
when it comes to sharing with people ideas for practical design,
if you want to just
tricks,
give us one more here, that would be great.
So in this case, you know, some ideas for selecting your background,
mm-hmm.
best practices for panorama. You don't always need to have a background, depending on your branding, depending
right.
on your goal. So don't always assume that you will have to get a photograph or some type of image. Photographs, when treated properly, they do great as panorama backgrounds. The panorama can be themed according to your branding, and it is okay to override the phone theme. It's totally fine. You have to be careful on how you embed text and logos in your panorama because sometimes it will be, those elements can be obscured or, you know, blocked by other elements that are floating on top.
Right.
And, you know, there are a few more there, but again, in the future, I'm going to bring you some specific ideas, and
sure.
we can probably even craft a few live.
So anything else to wrap up in summary for this time? We will definitely be putting
yeah.
links on the page for you to Arturo's favorite
mm-hmm.
web-based resources. There's a lot of resources that we published already, the user experience
yeah.
guide, a number of talks we've done around design. There's a design course on the .NET Toolbox.
Correct.
And we'll definitely have those for you. But we'll also be talking to Arturo more in the coming weeks and months. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's just critical for people to think about design when you create your Windows Phone application, because we want to help you get the highest rating that we can.
Yeah. And design and UX will definitely help you get more stars.
All right.
On the marketplace.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you next time from Inside Windows Phone. This is Larry Lieberman. Bye-bye.